in this edition of Ask Mike with the legendary Mr. Mike Sutton, by the way. How are you, sir?
I'm excellent, Nick. How are you?
Very good indeed. And in this episode, we are talking about sources of finance because it's changed a little bit. In the old days, when you and I first started out, we'd go to the bank and it would be a bank manager who looked a bit like Captain Mannering. And he also probably knew a bit about business, which a lot of the bank managers don't these days.
That's right.
And now there are lots of alternatives. So we're just looking at sources of finance. Where would you go if you wanted to start a company?
Well, I would say go for revenue first.
Right.
Because if you can get revenue up front, then you're laughing. I mean, the company I co-founded in the early 80s, you know, I sold a course we hadn't written yet for money up front. And that's a great approach to do. If you can get your customers to fund your business, that's absolutely fantastic.
Does that often happen?
Yeah, absolutely. If you're doing services for people who like you and trust you, then you can always get half of it up front and you get the other half once you've delivered whatever you're going to deliver. So always take that approach. If somebody's willing to give you money up front because they like you and trust you and they've got a problem they think you can solve, that's by far the best way of starting a business. It's much harder now to get money out of banks because of the, you know, exactly what you said about the banks have changed and the economic conditions and so on. But it's really interesting because we were talking about this the other day. There's all these new sources of finance, you know, crowdfunding and all of that. This is fascinating. And my view on this is, well, first, I'm not a finance expert and I would always make sure I've got a finance expert on my side, could be a friend or could be somebody working with me to look at the details. I'm no good at spreadsheets and that kind of thing. Because on the outside, it does look very, very enticing, which is instead of going to, you know, the bank or angel funders, you get yourself on the internet and there's people who like the look of what you're doing and they're willing to fund your business. Now, but I look at them as potential customers anyway, which is not so much investors. Here's somebody thinking, oh, I can make a lot of money out of this and I'm just an investor. It's somebody thinking, no, I'm really quite interested in the product or service you're doing. I'd like to have a share of that. So if you look at them as customers who's willing to maybe pay money themselves or get all their friends or I've just invested in this company, it does sound very alluring. But it comes back to the idea that whatever it is you're aiming to do, your new venture, you're trying to create a buzz about it. Now, for me, I'm a salesman. I'm always trying to create a sales buzz. So people put their hands in their pockets and buy some of the products or services or spend money on some hours of my time or whatever. It's early days with these things. So obviously, be careful and get the best advice you can. For somebody setting up a business who's thinking, well, wouldn't it be great to have, you know, a couple of 100 investors? This can be very difficult in terms of how it's structured and what rights they have.
And how you manage it.
And how you manage it. And again, there could be 200 people thinking, here's what you should be doing with your company in 200 different views.
Yeah,
but I am hearing some very good feedback from people that have tried it and said it works. It's a bit like, you know, our friend John Mitchinson has now got a crowdfunded publishing company called Unbound. The idea being that before you write your book, you just put on the Unbound site, I'm thinking of writing a book, and then who's interested in either getting a £10 ebook or, you know, £100 for dinner with me or whatever. It's creating your readers or interest in your readers before you actually start writing the book and get them to crowdfund the book.
And this again goes back to your basic principle, which is get the customers before you get the money.
Well, exactly.
You know, in any way you humanly can.
And of course you can reward people in terms of, you know, you bought a lot of stuff, Nick, here's an extra discount, or you bought a lot of stuff, Nick, here's a percentage of the company if I ever sell it.
Yeah.
Because the other thing about, you know, investing in a company or even stock options or having some stake in the company, this is lovely, but it doesn't actually mean something until somebody actually buys the company or there's some dividend scheme in place so that, you know, if profits are so much, then you get X percent. But that's no different to investing in a public company, but it is more personal.
This is it seems to be a mistake that so many entrepreneurs make, especially when they go into some sort of partnership deal. It's really easy to give away too much of a percentage without knowing what the other contributors are going to put in terms of effort.
Yeah, and also there is a mindset which is put about by a lot of people, including banks, which is, well, before you start your business, you've got to invest time and money into business plans and stuff. I'm very much in the bootstrap it for nothing and see if you can get money up front field, because if you've got somebody like that in your organization, you know, selling services around products and getting money up quickly, that adds credibility, it gets customers on board, it gets your name out into the marketplace, it gets you learning how to develop the product or service the way the customer wants it rather than the way you think they might want it. It's instant market research. But there is definitely something different happening with this crowdfunding stuff. And there's a lot of people with a bit of spare cash thinking, you know, maybe I'll go in for this crowdfunding thing. And to them, I have a very specific piece of advice, which is always assume you're going to lose your money. Then you won't be disappointed.
Yeah.
You're having a bit of fun. It's a bit of fun, a bit of play. You want to help the person that's starting a business. If it succeeds, I'm sure it'll be great. Don't look at it like an accountant or a financier would look at it, which is, you know, where's my return on investment? Because otherwise you will end up being disappointed, because that's not how these bootstrap companies work.
Only a small percentage are ever going to work.
And also, you know, things can change pretty quickly. They can decide to do something that you're not that interested in or you disapprove of even.
Yeah.
So be careful putting your money in, and be careful for what you wish for, because it could be your worst nightmare to have 200 rather dodgy investors who think they own more than they do. Because it is very early days. I think it's going to be successful because clearly, you know, things are changing.
One of the things I've sort of found interesting, I've been involved in lots of companies that seem to experience this. Investors get tetchy after 6 months, and it's never because the money's gone. It always seems to be because nobody's bothered to communicate with them. And as an entrepreneur, you know, you spend one Saturday a month knocking out an email to these poor people.
That's very, very good advice, because you get so wound up in your business, so wound up in the customers, so wound up in the operations, you forget the poor people that put their hand in their pocket on day one, and then they feel neglected and sad, and it can get quite difficult, especially if they have any control over your company in any way.
Yes, because then they're going to want to get involved and start making decisions.
That's right, and firing you. Which is the entrepreneur's worst nightmare. A bunch of people you don't like now suddenly telling you what to do. So I would always advise you should have somebody on your team that's good at investor relations in every respect. That again will be a salesperson, a bit like myself, who's always talking to customers saying, do you want to buy some more stuff? Do your friends want to buy some more stuff? And letting you know what's going on in the business, and we're talking to these companies and so on. It's a PR job which needs to be done. It's complete opposite to the person who's got their head down delivering the goods and managing the projects and that kind of, you know, grown up stuff.
Somebody who likes lunches is what's required.
Well, exactly. Somebody who's very clubbable, as we used to
clubbable,
say.
Clubbable, indeed. Yeah, very civilised. One more thing I want to, this isn't strictly on topic actually in terms of sources of finance, but I think it's worth bringing up as an issue, because again, it's something that so many entrepreneurs seem to forget. And that is the problem of running out of money. At your events, I've been to BMAP Monday, fabulous by the way, come down to BMAP Monday, it's a lot of fun. Now, you can back me up on this. How many people have we met who within 10 seconds we can tell that their companies are utterly desperate for money and they've left it way too late to sort out the problem?
Well, it's a truism to say that companies only go broke for one reason. They run out of money. It's not that they have bad products or services or the market collapses. And that's because they're bad at managing cash flows. That's why it's so important to get even a bookkeeper or somebody that's good at that kind of thing looking at the spreadsheets, warning you in advance.
But that's it. It's the ahead of time.
It's the ahead of time thing, which is unless we get some sales in the next 3 months, we will have a problem. I mean, the nature of the entrepreneur is to be optimistic, which is, I'm sure I'm going to bump into some bloke who's going to give me some order. I'm seeing a client next week, and I'm sure, you know, you talk yourself into it. I'm sure they'll give you money.
It's Del Boy.
Mr. McCorber is an even better example from David Copperfield. You know, something will turn up, but often it doesn't.
So you need your finance person, really. I mean, again, this is where it's not just the bookkeeper. It's not somebody who passively comes in and does the numbers. You want somebody who's going to go, look, you are running out.
Or looking forward for it, doing a projection for you, based around much more pessimistic data than you would put in. So if it's like, so Mike, how much do you think we're going to sell? They divide that by about six and say, okay, so if you sell a sixth of that, oh no, I'll sell much more than that. Okay, let's assume a sixth, here's when you're going to go bankrupt.
Okay, any last thoughts on sources of finance? Because we haven't even said don't go to the bank really yet, have we?
I think the bank now is a last resort. It's gone so far.
Give us the list.
Customers first, who'll give
customers
you revenue. Then friends and family. Then I guess there are angel investors. I mean, let's put crowdfunding at about that level. There's angel investors. There are people, if you go to things like Angel's Den and the Angel Investment Network, some people, if you have presented something reasonably well, they might well invest money in your company. Banks and debt. Well, if you've got good cash flow and somebody knows how to manage cash flow, you can go to a bank saying, look, I've got some orders and they're definitely going to come in, and you can manage your cash flow that way. And that's about it now, I think.
And do you put up the house?
Absolutely never. Never under any circumstances, because you're probably going to lose it, is my view. And that could be terrifying for your family. That's absolutely and utterly the last resort. And any banker says, well, you're going to put your house up, that's what everybody does. Don't believe them. It is not necessary to put your house up for something. I mean, it's a bit like me saying, oh, let's go to Las Vegas. There's a 50% chance you're going to win, red or black. Put your house up on it. You could have a twice as big a house next month, but you could have no house at all. So don't gamble.
What a nice way to finish this interview. Fabulous. There you go. So keep the house, for goodness sakes, and look at the many other options. Mike, thank you very much indeed.
Thanks, Nick. See you in Las Vegas.